T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
A new Washington Post investigation, based on thousands of pages of documents and interviews with some 400 officials, portrays the 18-year-long American war in Afghanistan as built on a web of lies, misunderstandings, and consistently poor planning. Douglas Olivant is a senior fellow at the New America Foundation, retired U.S. Army lieutenant colonel who served 2 tours in Iraq and spent a year in Afghanistan as senior counterinsurgency advisor to the U.S. military commander there. He joins us now on KNX In Depth. Sir, first of all, what's your take on this report from the Post? Just how damning is this?
Well, the reporters at the Post have done a great job in assembling all the data in one place. But if you've been following the Afghanistan story, there is nothing here that is going to surprise you. There's very little that hasn't been documented in Steve Cole's books, for example, in Anand Gopal's very good book. In a number of books that have come out in the last years that have shown that despite the positive statements that come out year after year, that the underlying behavior and the conduct of the war has been shaky, to say the very least. You could watch it happening on Twitter as each general each year would declare that, oh, things are getting better, it's getting better. And they'd be almost openly mocked by people who had served in Afghanistan. We've heard this before, and we know that simply isn't true. So again, this puts all the data together in one very clear, concise story pretty well, but there's really no news.
So it is a frustrating read, though, when you go through it and you do see it all in one place. Why
didn't
the strategies change? Were there just too many moving parts? Or, you know, there's always a bias towards inertia, right? When you're already in a plan, you get the tunnel vision and you go, I'm going to follow through with this plan.
Right. The saying in the Army is that the generals don't know what to do, they do what they know. And this seems to be exactly what's happened. You had one moment in, 2009, 2010, where something new and different was tried. But that was never sustainable. It really wasn't practical. It tried to pick up a template from Iraq and drop it on Afghanistan, a very, very, very different country. And then it very quickly went back to what it had always been, without fundamentally changing the nature of what was going on.
Well, as you say, this is confirming a lot of what has already been documented in a number of books that have come out. Are there any parallels here to the New York Times releasing the Pentagon Papers?
I don't think so. I mean, we've seen this comparison come out a couple times. The difference is, as I said up front, there's not much news here. The Pentagon Papers was news. That was showing something that really hadn't been portrayed before. There'd been a couple stories by Sheehan and Halberstam, but it didn't have the type of broad public exposure. I mean, again, Steve Cole has written 800 words saying pretty much exactly what this article says in 1800. It's not as if you can't say you didn't know or couldn't have gone and found this.
We've had the promises from multiple presidents. Here's what we're going to deliver on there. Here's the thought of what could be done. I mean, what can be delivered on at this point from your perspective?
Look, very little. We need to have some very realistic expectations about what Afghanistan is and what it can be. It is a landlocked country without a lot of human capital that has no product that retains value once you push it on the export routes, with the notable exception of opium. This is not a recipe for an incredibly viable society, and it's going to need, charitably, a very, very long time to work through its own issues, for its people to figure out what they want to be, before any type of intervention could really hope to accomplish anything significant other than creating a little Potemkin village in Kabul with a lot of military force.
What should the future U.S. presence there be? I mean, I guess what I'm wondering in the long term, are you optimistic or pessimistic about the future in Afghanistan?
Well, it depends on what we mean in long term. In my professional lifetime, I'm deeply pessimistic. It is hard to see how in a 10, 20, 30-year timeline, things fundamentally change in Afghanistan. Now you start pushing 50 years out, and who knows what might happen there. But in the short term, I'm deeply pessimistic. I don't see how very much can happen, and it strikes me the best course of action is cut a deal and let the Afghans work this out themselves, as painful as that might be for us to watch.
Douglas Olivant, senior fellow of the New America Foundation, retired U.S. Army lieutenant colonel, served at 2 tours in Iraq, spent a year in Afghanistan as a senior counterinsurgency advisor to the military commander there.